Good morning, everybody. This is IT Live. It's brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. This is the Wednesday show, so we always got my man Ian Boyd right next to me. Today, we're going to be talking about, did we hear what we wanted to hear out of scrimmage one? Ian does a good thing where he does five things I want to hear prior to the scrimmage, and then he has a litmus test to know if he got, so he doesn't get to back right and all that kind of stuff. It's a good way to check yourself. Also, is Texas going to play more zone defense? And then if we have time, we're going to talk the tight end room. I don't know if we'll get there, but that's the plan for today. Your plan for today should be to join Inside Texas, guys. All the best practice reports, all the team coverage, all the battles, injuries, how the offense looks, all of that stuff. And, of course, recruiting. Slowing down a little bit for this class. Maybe there'll be some movement, though. We have some people that are going to visit. And then also that 2027 class, you need to pay attention to them. They got some real ballers. Get Inside Texas for $1 for your first week. As a bonus, your membership includes a complimentary year to The Athletic. Also, guys, Paul's book, The 2025 Longhorn Football Prospectus, Thanking Texas Football, is the best preview for the Texas Longhorns. You will know your team far better by reading it. Also, SEC opponent previews, recruiting piece by Eric, roster management, NIL. It's smart. It's funny. You will learn a lot. All the links are in the description. You can get the physical or the digital. Just click the description and go buy it. You only have a few more days. Hi, Ian. Good morning, AR, Roaster, Jacob, Ike, Sugarcane Daddy. I did get a haircut like last week. People have been really excited about that. It's a free way to get engagement. I'll cut it again.
Papacito over there. What the primary ingredient he uses seems to change quite a bit. It's maybe perhaps related to return of Mexican soda to America.
Yeah. Return. It's everywhere anyways, man. That's what I loved about Austin. They had the Mexican Coke, and I was like, hell yeah. All right.
Didn't somebody do like a taste test where it was like, people actually like the corn syrup one better anyway?
I have no idea. Maybe to me, man, the glass bottle does a lot for me. It could just be that it's in a glass bottle that I enjoy. Okay. So we had the scrimmage report from our man, Eric. Justin had notes as well. Charlie had notes. Really well covered. But let's kind of talk through.
I had notes too, Connor.
Well, I'm saying yours are peppered throughout here as well, right?
So
in Ian's notes, guys, as well. So four guys had notes, which is awesome. First, Ian does a really good breakdown of explaining the context of the scrimmage. Ian, would you go ahead and do that? Because it matters when talking about these little notes.
Well, the for sure context was that they did ones versus twos, like a one offense versus two defense. I guess that's already implied. And when they did the full field drive drills. So the offense had some issues, and they had some issues going against the two defense.
And why? Why was that?
Because the defensive front was so dominant. It was hard to consistently do anything. There's definitely one drive where Arch took him down the field, and then they couldn't do anything in the red zone, which I know is the last thing anybody wants to hear.
And then there were some other ones where they did all right in the red zone. Let's kind of take it piece by piece there.
They did super well in the red zone when they did red zone specific stuff.
Yeah.
When they got there naturally after bombs to Parker Livingston, which I think both drives that got close were from bombs to Livingston. They could not punch it in. One time they just couldn't punch it in. Another time they incurred like three consecutive procedural penalties. And so that was, you know, game over.
Like false starts, illegal shifts type stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's part of the context. Another piece of the context was that I believe they actually spent, I don't know this for sure, but it seems like the offense spent most of their time in like 12 personnel. And
but defense, Ian, that's a very common personnel for Texas in the past. Why would that be different this year?
Well, they don't have Gunnar Helm, Connor. They don't have JT Sanders. They have Jack Andrews, but he's not a run blocker. They have Spencer Shannon, who they think is actually becoming a decent run blocker. But there's no way that they're going to be good enough. Like last year, one of their strongest features, especially in the second half of games, was to get into 12 personnel with Juan Davis and Gunnar Helm and just run outside zone a few different ways. And like teams, other than the really good teams, everybody else really struggled to stop it. They couldn't stop it. And this defense can very easily stop it, especially with this tight end room, which are not like a lot of big imposing blockers. It's all young, inexperienced athletes, or Jack Andrews, who's an old, experienced athlete, but not like a punishing blocker.
I wouldn't classify, you know, Helm as a punishing blocker either. Is there some?
Yeah, but he could. He hit the right guy, and he stayed in that guy's way.
So that's my question. With injuries, right, like on split zone, meaning the tight end is, you know, running back behind the line and blocking someone, is there a way that is just mostly you're getting in front of the right guy and slowing him down with injuries? Because to me, it's just like when I think Sanders, not a great blocker, Helm, not a great blocker, it seems more of the same. But you're saying there's even a further dip in that?
Yeah. Helm was a big guy.
Sure. Yeah.
So even though he wasn't like imposing, he was a reliable obstacle.
Good reach.
Injuries is not – you can't be sure that he's going to make good contact on his guy in the run game and really get displacement or whatever.
Okay, so they were in 12 personnel.
And the defense was either in base 3-4, which means they've got – like Trey Moore and Colin Simmons on opposite edges, just that's not fun. And then like 3 defensive tackles maybe up front, that's not so great either, right?
Yeah,
that's really hard. Like for the last couple of years, and apparently this year again, Texas has been good at maintaining enough depth up front along the D line to where most of the time teams don't even want to bother in 12 personnel with Texas. Because they'd be like, why would we get into a set where, like, Alfred Collins becomes a defensive end? We still can't get any push inside. We get Alfred Collins, like, manhandling our offensive tackle. And then our offensive tackle also has Trey Moore or Colin Simmons or somebody on their outside shoulder. Like, this is a freaking mess. Like, let's not do this. So
what you're hinting at is that do you think Texas would be a far better 11 personnel team with use of the spread, more wide receivers, Manning's running ability? Is that what you're saying?
I don't think that they gave the defense their best stuff.
So you think in this, basically the offense was doing their version of a base, and then they were just trying to run basic concepts.
Also, here's another thing. At this scrimmage, like all the parents go. So everybody gets amazing sourcing, right?
Yeah.
Because it's not that hard to find a few player parents that can tell you about what's going on. I mean, it's not that easy. Our guys do amazing work. But I'm just saying the information is available.
Yeah.
The coaches know this. So it's not like they're running all their new awesome stuff for the season in the scrimmage.
And it's also scrimmage one, too, right? Just by the nature of install.
Yes.
You know, yeah, you're going to kind of be at base regardless. So it's kind of a two-prong thing why you would see a basic offense. Do you worry when you hear?
Well, so just to wrap a bow on that, the next few scrimmages where they start being way more restrictive about who gets in, those are the ones where they really start to get into their bag.
So when you hear about getting into the bag, right, they're going to continue to install the offense as they progress in camp. Even throughout the season, sometimes they continue to install things in their offense. But this is where, for instance, I think of like the Wyoming game versus us, where we had some struggles on the goal line. And fans will go into this a lot. They'll say they will disregard any struggles versus a worse team, and they will say it's quote-unquote a vanilla offense, right? But to me, a vanilla offense is your core fundamental offense, right? Like, you're going to run counter every, you know, 10 times a game, every game, right? So even though it is base or core, that is the foundation to which everything is built on and the core execution of the offense. So whenever you do hear struggles, this is scrimmage one. I'm talking about more in season. Whenever you do hear struggles in the core offense, does that worry you at all that we're not able to execute the fundamental plays that we installed first things first for a reason?
Not necessarily. Because, like, maybe you're not going to be that good just running counter into the defense from base personnel. But could you be good if you have formationed counter to target specific defenders at specific angles, you know?
And disguise it and put it in context of other plays before it.
Yes, there's a huge difference between running 12 personnel counter as it appears in the playbook against a 3-4 over or whatever, and then running it from 11 personnel in a specific game context against an opponent where you're like, we're going to run it when we get on this hash mark, we're going to run it at this defender, we're going to get them into this set that we know that they like to use against this look, and then, you know what I mean?
We're going to motion the tight end from the slot to come get the block.
Yeah, we're gonna use motion so that we run it at the crappy defensive end instead of their good one.
Yeah.
So the way they layer all that makes an enormous difference.
It'd be
cool if they could just do whatever. Like, I have a friend that's always like, Texas gets whoever they want. Anybody could coach this team. No, like, they're doing a lot more than you'd think. To try to
sometimes match. I do, not with his point, but just the base point of, like, sometimes I do wish Texas could run up, and this is also in context to our defense, but just run to the line and run counter. Like, there's a part of me that doesn't want the context of the play and the motion. There's some part of me that just wants this pure execution, because I think we struggle there. I think Sark has to do so much heavy lifting to run counter, you know, and that sometimes is a little frustrating to me. But I think the context to here is that the defense is in base and they're up against a really good, at least probably top five in the nation defense. So that's probably asking a lot as well.
I think I would love to get there in the passing game. In the run game, I just don't think that's realistic. Like, teams are just too good. Good defenses stop the run. And
this is a good defense.
Yeah, you just can't count on being able to go line up and run the ball on good SEC defenses. It's too hard.
Yeah, especially, yeah, when you get to the top of the league, Georgia, SEC championship.
That's even like the middle of the league, man. It's like everybody has an NFL defensive lineman or two. Everybody has like linebackers and safeties that'll run and hit. I just think.
But what's kind of is it just SEC specific? Like, you know, how was Michigan able to do it all those years? Is it because the Big Ten? What's different there with their kind of lineup and run? They don't just line up, but you get what I'm saying. There are teams that are good at run blocking in college football that can do it. Why is Texas not one of those consistently?
That's an amazing question. Jim Harbaugh is one of the only people in modern football that you'll see that has actually been able to do that.
So it's just incredible.
Can you even name another coach that consistently builds power run games and it just doesn't even matter like who they play? They're going to run the ball and you're going to struggle.
No, there's not a lot. That's why Michigan is like the crown. That's why it just comes right to mind, you know, because they're one of the few, if not the one.
Paul tells stories because he knew players on those 49, not the 49ers. He knew players on those Stanford teams living in the Bay. And he was like, he said, he's held stories like Harbaugh would come into the offensive line room and sit with those guys in their meetings and be like, guys, if we're not great in this room, those other offensive rooms aren't going to get us nowhere. Like, I was just in the wide receiver room, no way. If we're not great in this room, we're not great. And he was like, just really emphasized the line. And he's like, all those guys would have like run through a brick wall for him. And they were like all workaholics in terms of like weight room, strength, meetings, preparation. You know, maybe they had a little something on the side to help them. I don't know. Although Harbaugh was accusing Pete Carroll of doing that. So either that was projection or Harbaugh doesn't believe in it. And so it could go either way on that.
Yep.
It's just he's a different person.
It's a different thing.
And they also they do stuff at Michigan, schemes the heck out of their run game. Mm-hmm. And they have sets where they're like eight or nine offensive linemen sometimes. They're like, oh, you don't have anybody we can hunt in the front six?
Or we're going to create a billion gaps.
How about your front nine?
I was going to say, your safety's going to, yeah, good in the E-gap. You're going to have a safety in the E-gap now.
I've seen them go like one year against the first year that they finally broke through and beat Ohio State. They actually went the other way, and they ran some almost like veer and shoot sets because they're like, Ohio State's linebackers don't actually know what they're doing. They're just used to overwhelming everybody with speed and safety presence, and we're going to spread them way the heck out. We're going to isolate their linebackers, and their defensive ends are going to run upfield, and they just smoked them. So that's
right. We got off track.
More than enough on Michigan.
Yeah, we got up. We'll just know the whole tangent on offensive line, but I took us off course. So basically, the offense was able to move the ball pretty easily up and down the field. In 12 personnel even, right, until they got to the red zone. Then they struggled against our base 3-4 defense, meaning that Colin Simmons, Trey Moore is on the field, that type of thing. Clearly, our defense is going to be better than our offense. What's new? That's been every year of Sark, and I'm okay with that.
Whoa. Our defense is going to be better than our offense this year?
Yes.
I don't know about that.
We've never – yeah, I bet you in FEI our defense will be better than our offense. I don't know any other way to prove it.
I bet you this. The defense may have better numbers this year than the offense, maybe. But if Texas wins the national championship this season, it's not going to be the defense. It's going to be because this offense powered
it. Well, I agree, because we've had an elite defense, and it's our offense that has let us down generally.
No, but
in those games that matter.
I don't think this defense can get Texas to the national championship game. I don't think it's good enough at that level.
I'll have to see. I mean, we had elite defenses that never got us to the national championship game. So I'm saying that by definition, it would have to be the offense.
But like last year,
more of a load.
Last year, Texas' defense basically dragged them to the semifinal into the goal line almost, right?
Yeah.
I don't think this defense can do that again. I think last year's defense will have been better than this year's defense.
Yeah. That's fine. I think that was an all-time Texas defense last year.
But this offense might make it where that's okay.
Hopefully. But I do think I still think the defense will be better than the offense.
I don't think so.
We'll have to pick a real metric, or else you'll be able to pick 70 different loose reasons why. So if we're just talking FEI efficiencies, I think the defense will.
I can tell I'm having trouble articulating this because people either disagree, which obviously no one disagrees with me if they understand what I'm saying, or they're like the differentiation is difficult because the same thing you're saying where it's like the defense is going to rank super high. What do you mean? Or like, well, of course, the offense has to be good to win the championship. I need to find a more specific way to illustrate what I'm saying. Oh, here it is. I don't think this defense can stop the best offenses in college football. I think this defense could even get wrecked by the top offenses in college football.
Yeah.
But I think this offense may be able to take it to any defense in college football. That's what I mean.
In the run game and everything in totality?
Just putting points on the board.
Arch Manning, the Arch Manning factor. Okay. I mean, I think the offense will improve for sure. So I'm not arguing on that, but
they're gonna be much better. Did you watch that Dolphins preseason game?
Yeah, I agree with you there.
Just kidding.
I didn't. That was not me, guys. I did not do a Quinn dig.
No, it's not all Quinn's fault. He needs time before you can really judge.
Sure. All right. Before we keep going, guys, we'll talk more about the scrimmage, but I want to hear a word from our sponsor, the one and only Academy Sports Concourse.
All right. Who's ready?
I'm open.
School's all in session now. At least it isn't DFW. Go to Academy. Get hooked up. Okay. So we talked some more about 12 personnel, Spencer Shannon coming, which was an interesting note, and I'm glad that he's doing that. He's more of the Y tight end in line blocking style. But is there anything more kind of that you wanted to delve into the 12 personnel side of things? You feel good.
That's fine. Context was huge, so we probably didn't learn quite as much from the scrimmage as we will from.
Well, let's talk quarterback performance real quick then. So you say on the day, Arch Manning has something like 12 of 16 with two touchdown passes and a sack in his own end zone for a safety. The lack of a run game. Got some?
No. Nobody asked me the details because I don't know who. I don't know who put him in the ground for safety or whatever. I don't know how that went down.
Okay. The lack of a run game put the offense in a fair number of third downs where they were around 2 for 6, but including one that set up a 4th and 6 that Arch did convert with the scramble. He also had another first down running what sounds like an option keeper. Anything of interest to you there?
It sounds like Arch was pretty solid. I actually noticed – in the summary that I've seen of the scrimmage, I noticed a few things that to me were actually a little bit concerning for the defense.
How so?
They stuffed the run game. Like the offenses could do very little at all in the run game. But they converted a ton of third downs, granted, probably against like base personnel or something and not the third down dime package. But they converted a lot of third downs, and Arch hit a lot of big throws that put them in scoring chances, and he hit Wingo like once or twice for touchdowns. So there was like there's a lot of big play explosiveness that the offense had.
And well, that because they're in base. I mean, not even being in dime, you're not even in nickel at that point, you know?
Yeah, I don't know how much they were. They might have been in big nickel some, though, which for Texas this year is probably just basically going to be nickel, right? Like, I think they'll have a third down nickel or dime, or they'll have, like, a coverage nickel.
Probably. But yeah, our big nickel is essentially just going to be our nickel.
Probably Grayson Littleton, but I think they're going to try to play as much big nickel as they can.
Yeah.
And if that is exploitable on third down, you know, that's – it's not great. Like the context of these things is everything. Like if the deck is stacked for the defense and the offense shows some explosiveness and it's like, and they're not even running like an intentional script. There's, you know,
yeah,
we're really diving in deep into the weeds and trying to, we're flipping over burning turtle shells and trying to decipher the future. But
it's also too, like,
I'm pretty good at that. So.
Coaches will do like, for instance, right on 1st and 2nd, they'll run like base stuff, right? They'll run counter. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows it's coming. They get stuffed. Then they're going to run outside zone and get stuffed. And then it's third and 8. And Sark's like, okay, here's a real play. And then they just to get the ball advanced. So it's a little bit of like jab, jab, right cross. So it's like, it's a little bit too, they can punch a little heavier just to tip the scales and move the ball forward on third downs too. So I'm always kind of curious of that, but you're right. Reading into the context matters. Who, trying to figure out who's on the field, what's going on. gives you a lot more than just stating simply what occurred.
One of the funniest versions I've ever seen of this is the 2015 Michigan State Spartans, who went to the playoffs, and then they got cooked by Derrick Henry and the Alabama, who won.
He's so good.
But they played him pretty good. Michigan State was absolutely like I formation base garbage on first and second down, run for a yard, run for 3 yards, third and six, five wide for Connor.
Spread Cook. Offense. Yeah, here comes the spread offense. Yeah.
Connor Cook makes chicken salad.
Yeah.
First and 10, repeat.
Yeah. That's what I worry about when I hear these kind of things in an early scrimmage that might be occurring.
But the Sark ain't going to do that in a game.
No, he's not.
Yeah.
No.
Mark D'Antonio would do that in games. They beat Iowa in the Big Ten Championship. They had like a 10-minute, 15-play, 19-play drive or something. It was totally insane. I think it was the game where they had to pause the game so this dude could come back out on the field in Indianapolis with the pellets. You know, remember that? He's like putting all the pellets. Do you remember this?
No, but that's weird.
That was so funny.
Okay. Yeah.
That's enough. We've talked enough about Michigan Big Ten football today.
If you guys are wondering about the landscape of Michigan football, just let us know. So here's the thing. So what's interesting is I think what most fans take from the reports is that Texas got stuffed in the run game and that's a problem and that we should expect generally, as we said, in the second scrimmage, the offense to – tip the scales back into their favor, both because they're naturally installing more, but also because it's more of a confidence building exercise. But what's interesting that Ian's saying is he already thinks he saw some things from the offense that looked like the scales were tipped their way, or that the defense has a issue in coverage, I guess. So do you want to hear next week? I think fans are ready for the offense has returned, right? Arch put up four touchdowns. You're saying that you probably don't want to hear that next week. Is that correct?
No, you don't want to hear that.
Okay, you do?
The only way this team gets where we want it to go is if the offense is a juggernaut.
Oh, I forgot your thesis of the offense having to carry.
Also, I think we already did hear that. Because like Charlie, our own Charlie Williams was noting when Sark came out for his media availability, and he's like, practice, our guys just practice their asses off. It was awesome.
Yeah.
And Charlie Williams is like, that means the offense had a good day.
Right. Yeah. And that's what's so tricky is how they engineer these practices. Like they'll make sure the defense gets some wins. Then the next time the offense is going to come back with a fury and then they're going to counter on the defense. And Charlie says that when, you know, his coaching GA backgrounds, they were giving the defense their scripts the night before. So the offense was telling the defense, this is what we're going to run. You know, they're trying to force looks and matchups. So also he would say they would look forward to the practices with Odom where Odom didn't get the script ahead of time because Odom would absolutely shut them down. So that's also an interesting factor too, right? Like the defense might know what's coming type of thing.
Yeah.
Let's hit this question real quick. I don't want to go long on it, Ian, but it's been up. Ian, can you elaborate on why you think the defense will get wrecked by top offenses?
There's two things here that are bad for Texas. One is that this defense, from what I can tell, just does not have like super high level coverage assets in the secondary. They've got dudes like Taff and McDonald and maybe Williams, we'll see what he's like this year, who are amazing support safeties that can cover ground, they can disguise, they can tackle, but they can't just like line up one-on-one. Like Michael Huff played one-on-one with Steve Smith in the slot in the national championship game. Huff could literally do anything. Kenny Vaccaro one-on-one against Tavon Austin in 2012. They don't have that guy. They don't have a nickel. And that's you're gonna look fast and you're gonna look good when you're playing teams that don't have the ultra skilled spread passing attacks. And then you're gonna play the team that does have that, and everything is gonna unravel fast.
So what Ian means is
he literally saw this in 2023.
You're talking about Washington?
We saw glimpses of it against Houston and Kansas State. And it was like, I don't really like that, but whatever, we won. And
what do you think
we saw it against a team that could do that with premium talent in Washington, and they eviscerated Texas.
But you don't think it's on par with like Jaren Thompson, right?
Why not? Jaren Thompson was pretty good.
His foot speed was just our foot speed's way better. Derek Williams can run a thousand times faster.
Can he?
Yes.
But still? Are we sure?
I'm 1,000% sure that Derek Williams is faster than Jaren Thompson.
Derek Williams was out there when Houston was torching Texas.
Who was?
Derek Williams.
Who was torching Texas? Say it again. Sorry.
When Houston was.
Oh, when we played Houston.
Yeah.
He's faster than Jaren Thompson.
Okay.
But Jelani McDonald has better athleticism than we had then.
Okay.
And so that's I think you're correct that it's not Makuba Barron coverage, but I don't think it's the same thing as 2023 either.
No, it'll be better than that. But how much better? I'm not sure that it's going to be so much better as people think. Like Jaren Thompson was an effective starter for Auburn last year.
I like Jaren too, but it was in those kind of matchups where they were like, hey man, you can go to Auburn. I think it's somewhere in the middle of that.
The problem was not that they had Jaren Thompson. The problem was that they only had Jaren Thompsons. Like you would see if Michael Taft is the same dude as Jaren Thompson. He's maybe a little more he's smarter still, that's a high bar because Jaren Thompson was a super smart, savvy player. Taft is like maybe a little more positionally sound and smart and disguised. But Michael Taft could get burned on a deep crosser if he gets
stuck on that.
He's not going to carry that either. The problem in 2023 was the corners had holes and the safeties. They would have two of those guys in the field at all times. And Catalan was kind of like that too. That's why Taft replaced him.
Yeah, I agree. I think last year's secondary was like one of the all-time secondaries. I love it. Like Barron and Makuba are two of my favorite players ever. So I'm not arguing that we're repeating that level of ability. And it's not just their athleticism. They were athletic and super smart players on top of that. So I'm never going to argue that we're just going to run it back like that. I just don't know if the fall off will be that precipitous as it was like in 2023. But I do
it doesn't have to be because they
it's one or two. You're right. It's one or two big plays. One or two big plays a game can really change the outcome of a game. And I do agree. Like I don't love the safety body type at the nickel spot, especially if you're running single high stuff. Especially if you're having, and you'll talk about this, how Jelani's having to play underneath zones, like the game that you reference. That's an answer, right? We don't want to cover deep. Here's an answer. It's better to not have to go to any answers and just have the coverage. So I'm with you on that. I don't think the coverage will be as good. I just think you're more bearish, right? Which is interesting, more bearish than I am on that one.
This is a huge deal.
It is a big deal.
This is like one of my things that I always hammer every year. You have to have dudes that can turn and run and cover in the secondary. You want at least three of them on the field at all times. Your corners and then a safety or a nickel. And right now, Texas looks like they're going to have two on the field most of the time.
Yeah, I do
You can zone it up. And when you're as fast and as smart and as good as Texas, we'll get into this in a minute.
I was going to say, this is our B topic, but we're already.
Yeah, I know. Part one is I don't think Texas is going to be as good in coverage. I love every single safety that Texas has on the roster. Jelani McDonald is an amazing football player. Derek Williams flashed some potential to be on a level that we have not seen that much at Texas. Michael Taft is an all-time favorite, terrific guy. But they're all the same sort of guy. and they're all going to maximize when they're playing with a nickel and maybe another safety next to them who are like corner, inside corner types. They're all great when you set them up to be heady and to wreck things. And if they don't get to do that because they have to actually cover somebody one-on-one, then they don't get to do the things that have you, all of you, convinced that they're the best players. Okay, that's one thing. Here's the other problem. This year in college football, the number of dangerous-looking passing offenses and spread of pass attacks is kind of alarming. LSU is going to be pretty nasty in the passing game.
Clemson.
Nussmeier, Anderson, all these guys. Okay. Auburn, I know there's reports that Auburn looks sloppy. Auburn doesn't have it. Hugh Freeze is a mess. He's too busy golfing. Let's just wait and see. They got some freaking amazing receivers there. Hugh Freeze knows what he's doing in the spread. Jackson Arnold is rebuilding his confidence after Brent Venables threw him under the bus. Let's just wait and see on Auburn. Clemson, we've already seen it. Terrifying. Ohio State, still loaded with NFL receivers. Actually have an NFL receiving tight end now. If Julian Sain is good, and he may not be ready in week one, so Texas may get off light. But if and when Julian Sain knows what to do, that is a terrifying passing game. And that is a, it's a, they have the potential to be a different level of terrifying this year at Ohio State than they have in the previous years. Because they've not had this like final piece at tight end that they like they have this year in Max Clair. Okay. Don't laugh. USC. Lincoln Riley didn't forget how to coach offense. It's got a dual threat quarterback again, Jaden Mayava. Their two receivers that they have that are their top two guys are like, people have no idea how good these guys are. Go watch them against Texas A&M. These two receivers were demolishing Texas A&M. Ike says we have that, Ian. Texas also fits into this category. Texas could have an unbelievable, terrifying spread passing offense. But that's my whole point. If they don't, they're going to run into these teams that they can't stop. And then they're going to get beat unless they can score a bunch of points. And last one. This is, I think, my national championship pick. Alabama Crimson Tide. Ryan Williams is back. Jeremy Bernard is back. A couple other young receivers coming up. Transfer receiver coming in. Washington tight end Quavis is back. Kalen DeBoer with Ryan Grubb calling the shots. Alabama, I think, is one of the more complete, terrifying-looking teams in the country. And this is going to – people are going to throw this in my face all year because Texas doesn't play these teams. They're going to get to, like, the SEC championship or they're going to get to the playoffs, hopefully. They're going to start playing one of these teams, and then we're going to find out. Okay? And you guys just bookmark this.
Oh, they're going to bookmark it, Ian. They're mad at you right now, dude. How dare you, dude? What do you think of these pass rush? What do you think Agata says? Pass rush helping a secondary?
You stop the first read with the secondary. You stop the second and third read with the pass rush. That'll be – when Texas looks awesome in pass defense this year, that's going to be how it looks. It's where they get a good pattern recognition, they drop to the right spots, and then by the time the quarterback gets to the second read and the defenders have to try to find the new guys, then Colin Simmons is already
– you make them hold the ball. And so you have to be able to solve that first look. And I think our guys are athletic enough to take away generally a first look, even if it's through smart positioning.
It's more about smart positioning than it is athleticism. Yeah.
So it's like, I think you can move your chess pieces around, getting a feel for probably where they want to target on the field. And I think you could probably do that, some of that, you know, schematically or position-wise as well, opposed to just like one-on-one, you know, coverage. All right. We went into the B topic a lot. Let's talk the scrimmage, the rest of the scrimmage. So you said overall it was a bit of a feast or famine for the offensive performances. and they were quite a bit better on money downs and red zone snaps than anything else, where they could scarcely do anything at all. Makes you think the defense was probably forced to do without the third down dime package, as you said. So reading between the lines, I would hazard a guess the offense could be pretty effective when executing a more carefully dialed up call, but fairly feeble trying to beat the defense and base concepts. So these were your six things. I thought it was five. These were your six things you wanted.
I added that one because
okay,
like half the comments were just crap about how I didn't emphasize enough that Texas doesn't want anyone to get injured.
Okay, because I was like, I swore it was the five things. So these were the five things that you wanted to see. No injuries. Not exactly.
Close enough.
Close enough. Winston going down with the shoulder thing. We don't know how much time he'll miss, but that's kind of a bummer.
That honestly, it does not matter. Because they're already like, reading between the lines, I think Sark is like, we have to find ways to get Townsend the ball on the field because he's just going to generate free offense for us.
Yeah, he's freaky.
They're not short of young, talented with the ball in their hand tight ends. So,
number two, Wingo with a dominant performance. You thought that was a check, right?
Sounds like that was at least pretty positive.
And then back to coverage, Grayson Littleton showing starter potential. It was more McDonald and Taft, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't know if he got a lot of looks. I don't know if he even played at nickel in the scrimmage.
Well, does Littleton coming on as a corner type, does that make you feel better? If he not game one, but as if he comes on through the season, do you now feel better at the nickel spot?
Yeah, but I mean, is he going to be a championship caliber? If they have to play him 70 snaps to beat Ohio State in the playoffs or Clemson in the playoffs, can he get good enough as a freshman to do that?
But it is more of a corner body type, which solves a little bit of that being worried about taking guys downfield.
You just need a freshman to be amazing at a extremely difficult,
complicated spot,
complicated position. Which, yeah, if that happens, then that would be great. But is that going to happen? Probably not.
Number four, O-line keeping Manning clean.
This seems like it was not amazing.
Due to the safety.
Yeah, and the penalties. So, decent. We'll see. Need to hear a little more there.
11 personnel, a dominant offensive feature. We didn't see that because it was more 12 personnel. It was almost a base offense that we gave. But we do expect 11 personnel to be a bigger factor.
Yeah,
we think just because it matches, you can spread guys out of the box. You're giving Arch Manning better ability to run. You're giving him more weapons outside. He's better with that kind of throwing stuff. So 11 personnel potentially going to be the best part of the offense, which I'm excited to hear about more. And then you wanted to see nasty defensive packages for scrimmage one. I don't think you're going to see that generally. You got base 3-4.
Yeah. Or big nickel. Yeah. Although actually we did see, I think we are seeing that Texas is big base personnel looks are pretty imposing.
Yeah. And just the athletes, man, on the field in a 3-4 is pretty crazy. Like the size speed combination is pretty uncomfortable for offenses.
Yeah. Or if they play with like McDonald down there, we've already seen. You can't teams that want to like get clever with 12 personnel and be like, are we a spread team or not? You don't know. Our tight end can move around. That dog won't hunt with McDonald down there.
Yeah.
It's not a great setup unless you have, you know, who's that dude that Brock Bowers. If you have him, then great.
Yeah, I think that's generally
you'll be okay.
Always going to be workout.
Everyone else, I don't know if that's really going to do much good for him. McDonald around the box.
We have a little bit of Johnny McDonald Taft stuff coming up next, but first, Let's hear a word from David McClellan.
I'm just going to say, guys, you probably need a fiduciary financial advisor. And I've got the guy for you. His name is David McClellan with Forum Financial. He works broadly and deeply with his clients as a financial life coach. And he should know something about coaching because he won several national championships as a swimmer for the University of Texas. He specializes in financial planning and has contributed numerous articles to Kipling on the topic of retirement tax bombs. So contact David today to be your fiduciary financial planner and schedule a 1-hour consultation to assess your financial situations. The free consultation is available, so just give him a call. The number is 312-933-8823. That's 312-933-8823. His email is also in the description below.
All right, so what we think will happen with Jelani McDonald in the slot, or maybe Taft, Ian went and looked at some games where we had this set up and if it worked well and how they did it. Go ahead.
One game in particular.
Arizona State. And so we're going to be able to look at what that might look like, what this year might look like on defense, and what McDonald was able to do from that spot. Anything from this block of text that you want to hit? Any other
comments? I do want to hit. Everybody keeps throwing at me that Michael Taft is an All-American. Guys, the people that vote on that stuff know less about football than I do.
I mean, that's generally true.
Michael Taft is an amazing player when he's in a particular kind of role, which is great. It's not a knock on Michael Taft. I love Michael Taft. He's not an All-American. If you put him at defensive tackle, he's not an All-American, right?
I don't know, dude. He's tough.
The difference between boundary safety and nickel isn't that extreme, but it's different. It's not the same thing. The things that made him an All-American in 2024 will not be true if he's playing in a different position in wildly different supporting cast in 2025.
It's what the defense asks you to do, right? If Michael Taft is asked to join into the box, make hits, support underneath coverage, that kind of stuff, he's really going to shine. Ian's saying if you put him at corner, making him run fades against guys, then you're in a trickier spot.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And he could play defensive tackle, so you're tripping. All right, Jelani McDonald is very comfortable playing in the apex positions around the perimeter of the box. Let's see. All right, where we got Jelani here?
He's the in space, just below the top hash, just above the Chick-fil-A sign. That's him.
Okay. Let's see what we're doing here.
They motion him into the box. It's a common trick. It's like, let's motion and see if we can make the nickel a primary run stopper. Okay, great. That worked out really good for you. Just knives through there. Yeah. Makes that tackle. Very comfortable. There's a lot of safeties have the speed to do that. Some have the tackling to do that. But you also need the comfort with being around all those big bodies and still playing aggressively. He's great. He's very comfortable there. It makes a big difference.
We're going to the extremes here to show you that there's the position and what you're asked to do is going to be different. A boundary safety and a field side safety are different. So that's, we're just saying if Taft is matched up one-on-one in a receiving against a receiver, it won't look as good as if Taft is able to play the box or over the top help, that kind of stuff. So we're going to the extremes to say, you know, defensive tackle to show you that the positions on the field make a little bit of a difference. There's nuance here.
I have another example. Tennessee had this really smart, great tackling white safety last year. They had a bunch of picks. But if you watch him against Georgia, Georgia figured out all these ways to attack him and isolate him in coverage one-on-one. And that was like their game plan, and they were cooking. So it's like, yeah, if he does these safety type things, he looks awesome. If you force him to do something else, he may not look so great.
And I think we'll be good because it looks like McDonald will be the nickel and Taft will get to stay in that boundary. So I think you'll see more of what you saw.
You're going to run out of cheats real fast if you play like an Alabama or somebody.
Yeah. All right, McDonald, same thing, Apex tier. Good recognition. A little bit of block destruction. They even arc someone out trying to think about him.
He played that. He's like, he is in a difficult spot. It's unbalanced. So he's not an outside leverage on that receiver because that receiver is ineligible to actually run a route. So McDonald is cheating inside, which is smart. But then that means he's almost like caught. Because if he needs to force that ball back inside, he's now caught inside of the inside receiver.
Well, they're trying to crack block him down here anyways, and he totally solves it.
He solves it, and he gets the stop on the perimeter. He's like making a quick – he's quick thinking. He's physical at the point of attack. He can get into the box. All big nickel kind of stuff. He's excellent, excellent at this stuff. They actually rewatching this game. They were way too conservative against the screens and how they played Anthony Hill. And they should have just left McDonald on a little more of an island at times to handle that stuff. And they would have been even better. But they actually...
I think they had to learn that though, right?
They got burned a couple times on inside runs where Anthony Hill wasn't there. And it was like, y'all should have told Anthony Hill to focus more on the box and Scataboo. Just let McDonald handle this perimeter stuff. I don't have any examples because that wasn't the point of the article, but.
The recognition's good. The block destruction is good. The angle's good. He's just athletic, man. Like, just how he looks on the field, man. The length and the speed combo is pretty wild.
He's powerful.
Yeah, he is.
If he were, the ideal position for him is Michael Taft's position, because he could do a lot of this stuff a lot.
Yeah, the boundary safety spot.
Yeah.
All right, so he's playing an underneath zone technique that asks him to cover ground laterally, but not necessarily turn and run with the receiver down the field. Instead, the cornerback would play deeper, handle the deep third zone, and the post safety would go to the middle third or cover the post. So McDonald's playing routes outside in now, and maintaining leverages as the final player on the outside as the force. He has to turn and run with a wheel route, but otherwise verticals get handed off to deeper players. So that's a solve, right? Why can't you just continue to play that style? Why can't solve
just,
for that?
Just in summary, they played Jelani in zone the whole game. And they kept either a safety over the top or they would bail the corner out behind him. And so it didn't matter that he was staying underneath with his eyes in the backfield because he was protected. Why can't you do that every week? Because teams will flood your zones and attack you in the passing game and overwhelm your underneath guys. That's why.
Yeah, the literal flood concept.
Or they'll spread you out to where your deep guys get overstressed because they're having to carry too much water for the guys in front of them. And then you get beat over the top.
Yeah.
So that there's, God forbid, they could play. I think they're going to be good at this. I think they're going to be able to take away the first read against a lot of teams doing this zone stuff. And then Simmons and Burke and everybody will stuff the pass by just getting the quarterback off his spot or in the ground. But there's going to be teams that know how to dial up shots where the first read is open, even against like smart zone coverage and smart guys like Taft. DeBoer can dial stuff up if they play him. LSU can dial stuff up.
It's all postseason threats.
Ryan Day potentially in week one. I'm really going to be watching that for a lot of reasons. That specific, obviously I'm going to watch that game, but that specific dynamic of the game, I'm going to pay close attention to.
But what Jelani's being asked to do, I think he looks great.
I could have found another couple clips, or I could have posted another couple clips where he got a little bit stressed on rollouts. And sometimes he looks pretty good because he does have good change of direction, but other times he was getting a little bit
Like what, he was staying back or he wanted to try to chase the quarterback?
He was having to try to find – no, he was fairly sound, but he was having to try to find his guy. He didn't always – wasn't always able to match the right route.
That's a big rep thing. Like that's a time in school thing.
Is he getting those reps though?
I think so. Hopefully.
And if teams know that this is what you're doing and they just dial up those specific plays that are hardest to beat in that coverage, how does that look?
Well, do you think you could also remember like against Ohio State, you know, we played a lot of too high, but it was a lot of disguise. Like, you know how we said, like, Jeremiah Smith was basically covered with a safety the whole time. That's just not true watching all 22. There's plenty of times where Barron and Jeremiah Smith are just hanging out and it's a run play, right? And it's man on man. Is the effective mixing throughout to where they're never calling the right play at the right time? Like, technically, if they got the matchup one-on-one, they could win, but that it's not the coverage that they called for. Can the disguise help make it to where it's like Battleship? They're not going to hit the boat at the right time.
Do they ever play a coverage where McDonald is in man coverage on the slot?
I think you could if you had a good feel for it. If you know they're not going to go to the slot, that type of thing.
Okay. If you can do it well enough to mix it in, then it's a way better.
Well, because you're going to want to mix it.
If you're balancing between different zone coverages that all protect him, then you have at least one tell, right?
My thing is, like, do it not on script because that can be tricky, but do it early. Have him in man a couple of times and then keep your looks similar. Well, this is the whole point of disguise. You get him in man a couple of times early so they think they're hunting Jelani in man. But by the time they're like, let's exploit it, it's not man. It's some type of safety over the top help. I mean, that's the whole value of disguise, is they're throwing the concept at the wrong time for the wrong coverage. But you have to plant seeds early and get it to pay off.
Maybe.
I'm telling you, we did it versus Ohio State pretty well. Like, they never really knew when Smith was going to be open or not.
Yeah, but there's a big difference.
Generally outside. That was the outside receiver too as well, though.
And he also, it was like either he's bracketed by a safety or he's got like Jahdae Barron on him. So it's not like there were, you know, that's not the same as maybe this guy will be totally wide open, but you don't know, or, you know.
Yeah.
Not to say that McDonald will be that bad, but there's – probably a reason why he hasn't.
Well, played. I mean, I know you're talking about like the top of the offenses, man, but like for the season, Jelani, there was talk that he could play corner. Like, there, it's not like he got put in safety room, but look at him physically on the field. That's not really a safety body. Like, he's more built like a corner with his height.
Oh, I don't know about that. If he could have been a corner, how come he never plays man coverage? How come he's always in zone?
Well, that's what he's not just – I think you're going – the concept of he can basically never be in man, to me, I don't think is correct. I think at times he could.
We'll see.
So that'll be the trick.
If I'm an offense and I'm scheming – to where I'm attacking the nickel, and if he's in man coverage, he's going to really be under duress with a bunch of my targeted play calls, then how are you going to disguise that?
He's playing on top. He's not going to run in the hip pocket of the player. He's going to stay on top of him. So if he catches, he's going to minimize damage. Same reason why corners will back off of an outside receiver.
Just give away easy stuff underneath.
Yeah. That's the name of the game. I mean, in quarters, you know that there's called the no cover zone, where you literally don't cover until they catch the ball and do that. It's better than the alternative of not staying on top and then they hit you for 40. I mean, it's common.
It's not ideal.
Yeah, it's not ideal, but it's like we're holding this to the standard of like, everyone's a lockdown and nothing can happen. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, the standard here is so crazy high that it's
standard. My standard here is national championship. I'm talking, what is it going to take for this team to win the national championship? And so, yes, the team could have these flaws and be 10-2 or 11-1 maybe and awesome and do really well. But I don't know if you can win the national championship like this.
But what about the collective value of the rest of the defense? I mean, you have your front seven.
This is the most important thing. Can you avoid checkmate in the secondary is the most important thing.
But can it be solved through smart positioning? Everyone has to be able to play man no matter what.
Not everyone, but maybe more than two guys, right? In the spread concept, you want more than two guys who can play man.
Yeah.
Y'all are talking like... Imagine like a 90s or early aughts NBA team without a center. And it's like, well, our other players are really good. Okay, but what happens when you play Shaq in the Lakers?
You're saying it's a cornerstone piece.
And you're like, okay, well, Shaq in the Lakers. Well, if you want to win the championship, you got to beat Shaq. That's what these like high-level spread passing attacks are like. It's like Shaq. If you don't have an answer for Shaq, then it's, what are we doing? It's like, sure, it's going to work almost all the time. Maybe it'll work decently in the playoffs.
Works till it doesn't.
It works until it doesn't. And you're going to get Shaq, and then it's like, well, we ran into Shaq, which is fine. You know, it's not like the end of the world. But
so where are we going to – what are we extrapolating from this? So more zone in 2025? Yeah. Probably yes.
And this – by the way, this is probably going to work super freaking well most of the time. Like overwhelmingly effective against a lot of teams.
Ian, I get what you're saying. What happens when the rush doesn't get home? Do we have a Baron or Makuba to erase things?
There's that. But Charlie, there's also, what if teams spread us out effectively enough to where there's not even a chance for the pass rush to get home? So think like Klubnik torching Malik Muhammad over and over again down this in the fourth quarter.
Well, think Arch when they sent the all-out blitz with Stone Blanton off the edge and Arch threw the fade to the slot. Like that, that's what you're talking about. And for sure.
You can, if teams are good enough in the spread stuff, then you can get to a point where you can't even get them past the first read.
I mean, you can get a free rusher and still,
so
if the quarterback times it, they can get it out.
So, but 100%, yeah, Baron and Makuba would erase stuff all the time. But not only do they not have that, they may actually have a little bit of that, because I do think Williams and maybe to some extent McDonald and Taft can actually do that a little bit because they're so smart and they are rangy. But just the deal where you just get guys isolated in obvious spots and the quarterback immediately knows what he's doing, then it's like Simmons does not matter.
Yeah. That's going to be the trick. But you've been saying it for years. Your experience at secondary, the secondary is always your main litmus test for going all the way.
Yeah. When these things looked good, I was more bullish on Texas than everybody else. And I don't think they have as much sure things this year. So I'm more bearish on Texas than everybody else. So now I'm like the negative Nancy. But
you're out negative in me, man. It's like, man, I'm normally the critical one that Eric's always like, dude, pep up.
It's only in terms of a national championship. I have no doubt this team is going to be super good. I think that's the tricky thing. But it's like, for me, I've seen too many instances where teams can be super good in college football, but not really be able to win the national championship. Because the thing that holds them back is a thing that is just super likely to come up. Like last year, I knew after the Georgia game, I pretty much knew this team can't win the national championship.
Well, I knew that. Yeah, that was a pretty obvious one.
It wasn't that obvious to. Didn't seem like it was obvious to everybody.
Yeah. Mine was more just like, yeah, what if our protections get attacked like that and Quinn's inability there? Sorry, I had to do my Quinn dig, but it was kind of jarring, like the meme. But yeah, I get it, man. I don't think the coverage is going to be good as last year. Like I said, Makuba and Barron were just really special to me. Having a corner body type in the nickel matters to me, like what Gilbo did. If you're playing a lot of too high, then I feel better about a safety body, like the Gary Patterson stuff, kind of safety body down at nickel. When you're playing one high, I get a little bit more nervous. So I'm not saying that there's no issues here. I think there are some things I need to be teased out. But, all right, Sugarcane Daddy. Ian has to do something embarrassing if Texas wins an Natty. Think fantasy football punishment. Ideas in the chat. Yeah, chat's mad at you today. Chat, come up with some of your
Hold on. Texas, if Texas wins the national championship because Arch Manning guides Texas to some blowout to some.
So here's the thing, man.
Shootout wins where Texas like beats LSU in the semifinal 41-38, and then they beat Alabama in the national championship 48-45. Then I'm not eating any crow because that's exactly what I've been doing.
Yeah, you are on. Yeah, you did say you like the offense. Do you think that's a factor that Arch could be so effective, deep, and explosive that it, you know, say you have a 20% defensive coverage depreciation, but you have a 30% offensive production deep. Do those end up balancing out to you in any way?
Yeah, like I said, if you can win shootouts, then you're great.
Cool. Any final things on the zone stuff? You think there will be more under these zones, that kind of stuff for Jelani?
I think we've a couple more of these. If Texas wins the national championship, not by shootout, with the defense like clamping down spread passing attacks in the playoffs, absolutely come up with a punishment. That's great.
What if you're just like so dominant in the run, like Texas, right? Where like our early downs are so dominant that teams are constantly in third and eight. So now you're at like what, 15% likelihood of completion. What if Texas does it that way to where they pass all right, but they're always so behind the sticks, the odds are just against them anyways?
Well, the teams I'm worried about would throw on first down.
So that's a big factor too. Sark had this thing where he would run on first and second and we'd get stuck. But it's that regard too that I think, what if, the run game is so shut down, like we know as Texas fans, that even the passing game doesn't really get to take hold. And if they're passing on first down, they're generally passing short, right? So are you worried about, if they're going like slants on first and five, how do you feel about it? If we do have a bunch of underneath guys at that point, like you're saying, that should help us a little bit too. So what do you think if we're able to kind of stop the underneath stuff, occasionally get hit deep, like whoever, what do you think there?
If teams need to attack deep on first and 10, there are guys that will do it. DeBoer will do it.
DeBoer is looming large in your mind, and he looms large in mine too.
He should.
Yeah, he's
way more afraid of DeBoer.
What he did to Sark twice,
This Bobby Petronic question says – that I'd love to get to that came just before Sugarcane Daddy's super chat.
Okay, let me see. All about the draw?
Yeah, Bobby asked, isn't it all about the draw? Wouldn't team who's aces against all comers in the spread possibly struggle with a more power-based attack? Well, not really last year. Last year, Texas was pretty good against anything, right? That was – probably 2023 was even better against a power-based attack than 2024. But the 2024 Longhorns were still good against a power run game and then way better against the pass. Also, if you're going to be great at one thing and you need to win in the playoffs, you'd rather be great against the pass than the power run game. The pass is more dangerous. The pass will be
just- mathematically, right? We know teams average, a good team would average like 6 yards per carry, right? That's a good team. In the pass game, they can average like 12 yards per pass. So it's just the pass can just be double the amount of yards than even a good run game. So just in how fast it takes you to get down the field, the pass is more dangerous. That's why you're seeing in the NFL, everybody's going too high, right? Like everyone is now turning to ways to stop the pass first, even though traditional football was always stop the run.
It's also easier to scheme the run in the postseason. It's easier to sometimes stopping the run comes down to a little bit of sacrifice of want to. And you just get a different level of focus and concentration and self-sacrifice from your defenders in a playoff game against the run than you do in week 9 or week 4. You know, they know what it takes. They understand, they're in the groove, and they're like, I'm going to hate myself forever if I don't plug that A gap. You know, it's a totally different ball game.
But there's also something to, like, you know, knowing what combination's coming. So it's like, say you do shut them down on first and second down, now they're in third and 8. Like, being in obvious passing downs also helps the defense, right? So say you're not locked down necessarily across the board, but you do know it's a pass, and you do know from your film study they run these 6 concepts. And then we also know that now they're in this formation, so they really only run these 3 concepts. So there's also like this constant narrowing down. If you're good in early downs, good in underneath pass coverage, and good in stopping the run, you still advantage the defense a lot, it says, by doing that. So there's also advantages to knowing what's likely to come that could help. That's not just pure double post, corner and safety are manned up type thing.
If you're facing DeBoer, it could be.
DeBoer, man. The Kirby Smart of the offense looms large.
Sark will do that too. Especially this year, Sark may do that on a different level than we've seen.
But if you get in like, you want to do that sometimes in those 12 personnels, because you're trying to force guys into the box, you're trying to guarantee one-on-ones on the backside. But if our defense is good against 12 personnel, it discourages a little bit from the pure shot plays. The flip side is now they're in 11 and they can match a little bit better. But there's some things here that I do think are interesting chess-wise that could advantage Texas if we're worried about pure coverage. We're ending on a positive note. Ian cannot respond.
The better case scenario is something like 2018 Clemson, where I don't know if that was one of the best pass defenses that they had at Clemson, but they were smart. They had Isaiah Simmons. They were smart. The D-line was dominant. And they would get into all sorts of different too-high blitzes and disguises. And so it was kind of hard to hunt them out. And Alabama had some trouble figuring that out with Tua Tagovailoa. And they baited him into a pick 6 with a really clever too-high blitz. But then also just like Trevor Lawrence cooked him, because that spread passing game Clemson had was too much.
Yeah.
That's what it looks like if Texas wins this year. It's like the young quarterback and the spread offense are just murdering you with big explosive plays, and the defense is clever enough and dominant enough up front to make big plays and get stops that make the difference in a high scoring game.
Let's turn this. We need some OU negativity from Ian to a tone. Ian, what do you think about Mateer's gambling situation?
I think it's exactly what it looks like. It looks like
you named sports gambling. You named the game, and the game did happen the day before. So it's pretty concrete there. My thing would have been like, I was playing NCAA, but the game wasn't even out at that point. So I'd have been like, I was playing NCAA 50. Me and my bros, we play matchups ahead of time on NCAA. There's ways to wiggle out there, but the game wasn't back yet at that
point. Well, unless he gets deposed, he doesn't have to say anything other than descriptions are not indicative of what was happening, which is what he said.
Yeah.
I really doubt he gets in trouble for this.
Me too.
I think athletes need to be, they should be extremely careful with sports gambling. It's kind of like how like an alcoholic just needs to be like, just don't even mess with alcohol.
Abstinence, man. Yeah.
Just don't even mess with it. I think we would all agree they're like a couple dudes in college football just making like friendly bets with their friends on teams and games. That would be so easy if you're like a college football player and it's like two teams that you've played against are playing each other.
You know their personnel, you know who's, you know,
like, oh, they're gonna beat them, and it's like, no way, man. They're, oh, you want to bet $40, $100 or whatever? They have NIL now, maybe a little, even more than that, right?
Yeah.
And that just feels so harmless. And it doesn't seem like that big of a deal. But
to me, that's harmless. You're sitting with your buddy on the couch. First off, don't do it through Venmo, just pay each other and cash $20 there. The problem is if you start messing with the dark side of that and going to people that actually run books and that kind of stuff, not like the legitimate stuff, but, you know, your buddy down the street that runs a book, that's when you get into trouble. And I heard, too, they're trying to legalize that NCAA athletes can bet on the NFL because they said it's a different sport. You'll like that, Ian, but because you think it's a different sport. But that's it. The problem is gambling in general, right? So say if I get super down to a bookie, I'm a college football player, I'm betting on Olympic swimming, and I get down $15,000 to some scary guy. Well, guess what? He can make it back up in my sport. So it's just gambling in general, no matter if you're betting on anything in sport, it still can be a problem. Now, I don't care if you're betting your friend $20 on a game, who cares? But if you start getting involved in the dark side of everything, then you might have to do something in a game.
It's not worth messing with. Shouldn't have done it if he did it, which he probably did.
Probably the problem is, too, Mateer didn't expect to be a baller. So that's something you do your freshman year at Washington State. You know, you're not a heralded recruit. You're out of Little Elm. And you just don't anticipate, you know, in 3 years you're going to be the Sooner quarterback. So it's also that thing. Also, just don't name it on your byline.
If this is all he did and he gets off the hook for it, it's fine. It's not going to bother me.
It doesn't bother me at all.
It's a really bad idea. College football players should definitely not do it. It may be worth investigating to make sure this is not something he's caught up in, just because you want these guys to like really stay away from that for all the reasons you just gave. Watching Oklahoma's fans react to it on Twitter was absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
Cause they're like, it's kind of like watching someone go through like the five stages of grief. Yep. Or like that narrative thing I did the other day of like arch narrative.
Well, it's just, they just go to
cycling through one thing after another. First, it's like, this is clearly fake. Everybody's falling for this and it's fake, which is probably the most reasonable take I heard from Oklahoma people. Cause when I first saw it, I was like, yeah, but that looks fake. And then it was like, definitely real.
And then they had to readjust.
And then it was like, you could just see them trying out so many excuses. They're like, I guess you guys don't use Venmo and you don't know that those taglines are all jokes and they're not real. It's like, okay.
Like, and to be fair, that is a thing.
That's quite a game.
I was going to say, people do joke all the time. Like, they just say it's for some nefarious purpose on Venmo. But then to name sports gambling the specific game the day after the game occurred, that's when the joke is not concrete there.
Yeah.
And then he said it was an inside joke. And then my favorite one is whenever he just came out with the post, he's like, no, I didn't gamble. And then all the Sooners were like, see, he's good. He said he didn't gamble. I would love to see them as courtroom judges whenever the defendant's like, I didn't do it, Your Honor. And they're like, there we go. We're done. He said he didn't do it. But it was funny, man.
Yeah. And then there was like who's behind this? Is this Texas? Is this Texas trying to get our quarterback? And it's like,
well, I was telling you yesterday that there's this little group of trolls who constantly make fake journalist accounts, and they go and pull some guy in a suit, and then they put in their tag, you know, whatever fake group they're working for, or they'll tag a real organization. We had it last year where there's this one dorky guy that made a fake account, and he would like comment on our tweets and be like, I'm hearing from practice that XYZ happened. And then we all jumped on him. We were like, who are you, dude? Like, we don't know you. They think the Texas sports media, everybody knows everybody. It's like 20 guys, right? So it's, you know, who's with what organization, you know, who you notice who's new. You can't just come out of nowhere and say you're a Texas guy. We would know who you are. So we all jumped on him, and then he quit doing it. But it's a whole thing where these trolls are making all, they'll normally do like, you know, they were behind the Quinn Ewers to the portal thing. They'll say a big player is going to transfer. They'll say a big player blew out his knee. They just do this annoying stuff. This was the first one where I've seen it actually had real information. But
it's not rocket science to create an account and pull.
Yeah.
It's like, it could have been, if I'm an Oklahoma fan, I'm hoping that this is like a Texas or Missouri fan that did this and like just was like snooping around because they're a psychopath.
Whoever found this is a weird person.
And like found it and like just blew it up.
Yeah.
Just to cause them problems. The last thing you would want is for this to actually be a smart, capable person who's targeted your quarterback and might like drip, you know?
The funniest one was the Sooner fan. Not. Probably. The funniest one was the Sooner fan that said it was Michael Hawkins' dad. That great. that was my favorite one. But I don't really think there's. Do I think he gambled? Yes. Do I think he gambled in a lot of money to a bad guy? No, he probably gambled with his friend. Like I said, he's a freshman at Washington State. He doesn't know he's going to have this prominence in 3 years, right? He doesn't know he's going to be the Sooner quarterback. All that kind of stuff. So. And I think in this case, the investigation is probably the punishment, right? Just having to, it's all over national media. Yeah. The OU is going to be on you. I think he's going to learn his lesson just from this alone.
One more thing that came up out of this is that everybody's now calling him Moneyline Mateer.
Yeah.
And that has major potential as a nickname in a lot of different directions.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. If he's awesome this year, Moneyline Mateer is like the most gangster nickname, right?
Yeah.
But if he's like turnover and sack prone and is throwing games away,
Moneyline Mateer. It's the money line for whoever is against him. Yeah.
Yes.
But okay. I thought it was fun. It was real funny. yeah, I thought it was fun, man. Don't gamble if you're in sports. It can just put you in a bad spot. Probably don't gamble at all. I don't think it's a super positive activity unless you're Paul and you win, I guess. But not a lot of Pauls out here nowadays.
Everybody thinks they're a Paul.
Yeah. I'm not a Paul. I know that. I would do $1 sized ones just for fun. And it would mostly be in-game because it would just engage me more. And I lost all the time. I did the classic dumb guy. Like, I'd be like – you know, went up here, and then I'd be like, this is worth $5, and then bet it all and then lose. So I'm definitely not somebody that should be engaged in it. I don't spend the time to be good at it. You need to – those sharps in Vegas, man, they have a lot of tricks and a lot of information that we aren't even privy to sometimes. But
– yeah, I've seen that before.
Yeah, dude. When you watch those, like, top guys, they're also doing things to put things in their favor, right? They're betting on certain sides. They're going to move – if they don't like where the line is at, they're going to put enough money on the opposite side to move the line to where they like it and then get there. There's so many – you just don't have the money. The average guy doesn't have the money to move lines. But those guys, man, you're playing in a – with the sharks in that world. It's pretty tough. All right.
Yeah, the best example ever of this is that I learned from picking against the spread just for columns. I never bet. That if Vegas sees something super differently than I do, there's something I'm missing.
Yeah.
And so there was like a Baylor line against like a weaker TCU team. I can't remember who they were. I think it was TCU. And Baylor, or West Virginia maybe. And Baylor was like barely favored in the year with Matt Rhule, where they were just like whipping teams. And I was like, this is so dumb. Baylor is going to kill this team. And then I turned it on and I watched Charlie Brewer, and he drops back on a deeper throw that he had just been ripping Oklahoma State with like a week or two earlier, and throws a total duck. And I'm like, oh, Charlie Brewer is beat up so bad and he can barely throw the football. This game might be close. Maybe that's why Vegas.
Yeah.
And there's another one like that in 2011 where Texas was favored by like 9 against Colin Klein in Kansas State. And I was like, this is insane. If I'd had any money in 2011, I would have wanted to bet all of it on Kansas State to cover and to beat Texas outright. And they did. But it turned out that Colin Klein didn't practice all week because he was so beat up.
Yeah.
So those are the things that really catch you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not 2011. It must have been 2010. Mm-hmm. It must have been 2010.
Yeah.
When I had even less money.
If you have money, tip of the day. Yeah, you said it. Treat it like an entertainment thing, right? You're just spending the money to have fun and be engaged. Do not use it as a retirement plan. All right, chat.
Get David McClellan for that.
Yeah. Yeah. If you actually want to manage your money responsibly. All right. Thank you, chat. That was fun. I'm sorry Ian did that to you guys. I hope you forgive him. You do need to come to Inside Texas, though, guys. Practice reports, all that stuff dropping. You'll love it. Recruiting. You can read Ian's other articles that'll make you less mad, I believe, to get some more schematic knowledge. So right now, guys, you can join for $1 for your first week. As a bonus, your membership includes a complimentary year to The Athletic. And then our man Paul, buy his book, guys, 2025 Longhorn Football Prospectus. You only have, 17 days to get locked in. All the links are in the description there. Thank you, everybody, for watching. And, of course, this was brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Have a great day, everyone. Peace.